This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Let's kind of switch gears a little bit this hour, starting off with the Pitt Panthers.
Yeah, because that's the road trip tonight. And, you know, look, Pittsburgh's consistently top three, top four. Just to everybody looks at them that way in the Coastal Division. But, Pack, the thing about it is you look at Pat Narduzzi's 29-20 against the ACC. He's only got one losing record in six seasons. But 12-9 in non-conference games. And sometimes is it about the opponent? Is it about the way the schedule falls? Things like that. It's one of those things that kind of is a head-scratcher, to be honest with you.
I think when you look back at those numbers, I think you have to look at who do you play. I have always been impressed that Pitt's non-conference schedule has always been pretty good. Again, obviously the Penn State series, I need to tell you, unfortunately, that thing's gone away. It's no reason for that, but they played Penn State. You know, they jump on a team like Oklahoma State. There's nothing easy about playing in Stillwater along those lines. I've always thought Pitt has played a really decent non-conference schedule, and that should make you better for your ACC competition. So I think sometimes you look at numbers like this and you go, man, well, why aren't they dominating non-conference opponents? Well, it's who you schedule. Number one, it's how good you are. Yeah. And number two, how good are the teams that you are playing? And so I think it's a combination of all of the above.
The interesting thing is the non-conference schedule might be fairly friendly this year. So we're talking about potential big numbers for Pittsburgh, and certainly Carolina, Miami are getting a lot of headlines. Virginia Tech's been in some of the discussion. I think Pittsburgh's in that neighborhood right there behind them. It really kind of depends on how you want to look at it. There are the road games, okay? Look at the road. There are only five of them. You got seven at home. And let's be honest, the non-conference schedule – UMass, Tennessee, Western Michigan, New Hampshire are all at the front, Pack.
That may be as, and again, I don't mean to cause a problem for Pat Narduzzi, but in terms of what they have played in the past, in terms of degree of difficulty, I think this is their easiest non-conference schedule. And that's one of the reasons why I am so high on Pittsburgh as far as, hey, Miami, North Carolina, gotcha. We know who you are. You're sitting over there. Who can compete? Mm-hmm. I think Pitt can. And when you look at that home schedule, Wes, you mentioned seven home games. However, look at who they are, right? Miami and North Carolina go to Pitt. Yeah. Clemson goes to Pitt, I think, for the very first time. You're talking about arguably the three best teams in this conference as we sit here in mid-August. Clemson, North Carolina, Miami, put them in whatever order you want. Pitt gets all of them at their house. All of them. So, yeah. You talk about a perfect schedule. UMass at Tennessee, Western Michigan, New Hampshire. Hey, it's got everything you want. A big-time road game at Tennessee in front of 100,000, where the Vols, who I don't think are very good, go prove it if you're Pittsburgh. You could be 4-0 making back-to-back road trips to Old Tech, New Tech before the crazy stretch of the second half. Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, and Virginia coming to your house in late October and November. So I think it's a great schedule for Pitt. I really do.
All right. Now, FPI, Pack, our friends at FPI, have Pittsburgh favored to beat UMass in week one. FPI has Tennessee as a slight favorite.
Wrong.
In Knoxville.
Wrong.
FPI has Pitt as a favorite to beat Western Michigan and a favorite to beat New Hampshire. So the last time Pittsburgh had 10 wins was 2009. Let's assume they win all four non-conference games here for the moment, okay?
Okay.
Do they have six wins in conference right now?
I would say probably not, because they're going to be dogs against Clemson. They're going to be dogs to Miami. They're going to be dogs to North Carolina. All three of those games are at home. So for you to get to six, you got to knock off one of them. Are they capable of doing it? Sure. There's no doubt about it. It's football. It's college football. So anything can happen. But a lot of good things have to happen for any team to win double digits. To me, Pittsburgh and NC State are those kind of teams this year that if some good things can happen, you may get to double digits. Mm-hmm. It's possible. Would you bet the house on it? No, you wouldn't, because you'd need to see it to believe it. But I do think Pittsburgh should be 4-0, because because I think they are better than Tennessee. And I do think they're going to have the opportunity to have one of those 9-plus win seasons. I think that's doable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting. They win all four non-conference games. Do they have six left in a 4-4 set in league play? The home games again, Clemson, Miami, Carolina, Virginia. Roadies are Syracuse, Duke, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech. Okay, it's funny how you have these conversations in the ACC, and then you turn around and say, okay, well, let's use Virginia Tech as an example. We agree Clemson, Miami, those are difficult. That's a difficult game. North Carolina, difficult game. But here's the thing. Now all of a sudden we're talking about, okay, Pitt, Virginia Tech. Well, that leads you to another discussion. That leads you to the discussion on where Virginia Tech's going to be at that point, right?
Right.
Leads you to the point, where's Georgia Tech going to be at that point against arguably the hardest schedule in the country, one of the hardest schedules in the country.
Right.
Hey, by the way, when you get Carolina in November on a Thursday night on a 5-day, what's that going to look like? Oh, by the way, sneaky Virginia's in there too. You see, this is the part where this is how we get to coastal chaos, friends. This is how we get to coastal chaos. But I think those are the kind of conversations we're going to have. Pittsburgh's just the headline school. I think you're right about NC State. When the road trip got to NC State, it was early. But the more we get closer to kickoff, I think NC State's one of these schools too, Pac, like you said earlier.
Yeah, I think Pitt and NC State, to me, are in the same category that, you know what, if you stay relatively healthy, if the ball bounces right, you can win close games. I think NC State and Pitt are both capable of having double-digit winning seasons. Now, that has not happened very often at all at either school. We mentioned 09 for Pitt. It's been a while since, Philip Rivers, last go-around for NC State, the early part of the century.
That's right.
But I think both teams are kind of built the same kind of way in terms of what they're going to be able to do, and I think the schedules are right there. But I will tell you, September the 11th are critical, critical games for those two schools. If you're going to have a 10-plus win season in one of those kind of years, NC State must win at Mississippi State. Pitt must win at Tennessee. I mean, if you're that kind of team, you look at those clubs and go, hey, that's cool. That SEC logo is awesome. Cowbells, man, they're really loud. But guess what? Yeah, you got 100 and some thousand that are coming through the team. Tremendous. But we're just better than you. That's what you've got to do. And I keep talking about changing the narrative for this league, this side of Clemson. That's how you change it. You got to win those games. And I think Pittsburgh is going to be offensively fun to watch. I think Kenny Pickett's in for a big year. Pat Narduzzi was on with us last week, talking about 9 of his 10 top receivers are back from a year ago. Their defense will catch up because that's the way Pat loves to play. I think the upside of Pitt is really, really good. And I think this is their best, easiest non-conference schedule in years. And it sets them up for, number one, a great home slate. Mm. And, hey, I got to go to Syracuse and Duke. I mean, if you ask any ACC fan, I think today, hey, who are the two easiest road trips for you today? You get to pick. I would pick Syracuse and Duke on the road, given what we think they're going to be, what they're coming off. They're going to have to show us something. So, again, I don't think you could script a better schedule if you were Pittsburgh. You get the big boys, all of them, all in your backyard. You got to go to Syracuse. You got to go to Duke. Okay, cool. I'll take my chances with those games. I got to go to Tennessee. You know what? I just think we're better than Tennessee. That's got to be the mindset. So we'll see how it plays out. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. And, you know, you're almost hoping that the clock moves faster. But then again, it's like Manny Diaz reminded us yesterday, oh, no, we need to still keep practicing.
Well, wait a minute.
For the season.
Yeah, now if you're Alabama, listen, if you got Bama in week one, that's not going to Tennessee. That's not going to Mississippi State. That is a different beast. And Manny needs a couple more weeks. Again, we were kidding around with him about that yesterday. He said, hey, appreciate you guys giving us a couple more weeks to get ready for Bama. Hey, take your time with those guys. All right? That's a whole different beast.
Yeah. This is going to be fun, though. We'll do some more breakouts on these schedules. But with Pitt, the road show tonight, good opportunity to do it. And a chance to remind you that the road show is tonight at Heinz Field and the Pitt UMPC Rooney Sports Complex, 7 o'clock Eastern time, right here on ACC Network. Dallin Cuff and Eric McClain in the Steel City. They'll catch up with Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison and also take you inside one of Pat Narduzzi's practices. All comes at you tonight, 7 o'clock Eastern, right here on ACC Network. Sounds like a good time to be had by all. Enjoyed the visit last night at Pittsburgh with Scott Satterfield and the Cardinals as well. All right, stay tuned. When we come back, one of our favorites on the show is Paul Zeiss, who covers all of Pittsburgh sports but sees the Panthers from a pretty good angle as well. We'll talk to Paul when we come back. Packer and Durham on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on this Tuesday morning. Many thanks to Brad Johnson, who joined us from camp, if you will, down there in beautiful Georgia. We're going to switch gears. You mentioned our tour, the ACC Network Tour, is in Pittsburgh tonight.
Yeah.
And so we started the hour talking about Pitt Panther football. And we're going to continue that conversation. We're going to continue our conversation with Paul Zeiss here momentarily. I think he's good to go now. So let's go up. Let's go up to the turnpike.
All right.
Getting ready to head to the links. Yes. Paul Zeiss joins us. Paul, what's happening, man? Life treating you all right?
Well, it is, yes. I mean, I'm getting ready, like I said, to go play some golf, and so that's always a good thing. I don't get better at it, but I continue to try and do it.
Well, it beats working. I know that much. You can go shoot 196, and it beats a day at the office every day of the week. Promise you on that.
Well, that's true. And believe me, 196 is probably in range.
Hey, Paul, the road trip on ACC Network tonight, previewing the football seasons at Pittsburgh. Mark and I have just talked about it, and obviously, you know, Pat's got a great team. He's got an experienced team, first of all. He's got to make sure his offensive line is tidied up. What else do you see that gives you hope about where this Panthers team might be this fall?
Uh-oh.
Oh, we lost him.
Somebody on the turnpike got a hold of Paul Zeiss. Doing another live interview from off the turnpike up there in beautiful Pittsburgh. We'll get Zeiss back on.
There you go, right?
Get his take on what's going on up there at Pittsburgh. But you mentioned the tours there tonight. and again, we just had Pat Narduzzi on the show last week, and you could sense the enthusiasm for his club, right? He knows offensively they've got a chance to be really, really good. And if that defense can catch up, and I was mentioned, I think of Pat Narduzzi, first thing I think of is defense, defense, defense. They lost a bunch of dudes in the NFL, but he's recruited well on the outside. He's still got some guys. So the defense will have to catch up to the offense a little bit. But the upside for Pittsburgh, so we just point out, you go through that schedule, it's laid out for them to go on a run if they're good enough to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the other element we're looking at, Mark, with Pitt is the defense may not have the household names that we've talked about the last couple of years. Still pretty good, though. I mean, that's the other part about this. The guys like Kalijah Kancey inside, Savassier Dennis at linebacker, Deslon Alexander, guys like that. I just think they've got a real chance. I think Paul's back with us. All right, real quick here, Paul. The idea they could have a pretty good year. How much are you buying in to where Pat is right now, knowing he's got a couple things I know he wants to take care of in fall practice?
Well, I mean, I think it really comes down to their offensive line, guys. I mean, their defense, I know they lost a lot of players. I know they lost some guys to the draft. They lost some really key players. But I'm going to tell you, I think the biggest thing with them is very, very simple. Their offensive line. If they can block and they can run the football the way he likes to run the football, this team's going to be really dangerous to whoever they play, because I think the biggest thing that people need to remember is they've got one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and I think they're going to be able to throw the ball. Jordan Addison is a guy that played really well last year. I think he'll take the next step for them, and I think that they have a chance. Now, I'm not saying they're going to necessarily win the ACC, but they have a chance probably to win the Coastal if they're able to do what they're, you know, if they're able to do what they want to do up front. Last year, they weren't, and that was a big problem.
You know, we talked about the schedule too, Paul, and again, nobody's seen anybody play yet, so it's a lot of speculation. But versus what Pitt has played non-conference-wise in years past, I think this is a very manageable schedule. Years past, Pitt's really always loaded up on two or three really good non-conference teams. But I think when you take a look at what they've got this year, yeah, the road trip to Tennessee will be fun, but Tennessee hasn't been relevant in 15, 20 years. I think it's a manageable schedule to get off to a good start, and then you got the big boys, Clemson, Miami, North Carolina, all coming to your house. If everything falls into place, I think there's huge upside for this Pitt Panther football team in 21.
Well, I think one of the things I've said for a long time about Pitt is their biggest problem in a lot of years has been they schedule too hard. And, you know, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but they're not going to bring fans, you know, in unless they play Ohio State, Penn State, Notre Dame, or West Virginia. So to bring in guys like Oklahoma State to come in here and blow your doors off and things of the such, you're not selling tickets anyway. Fans aren't coming to those games. So you might as well bring in Youngstown State and get wins. And this is the kind of year where if you look at their non-conference schedule, they have a real chance to get four wins, if you think about it. And, you know, the Tennessee game is the kind of game, though, they usually lose, unfortunately. That's usually the kind of game they go down there, they're playing against a team who's not very good, and they blow it. So, you know, if they blow that game, then we're starting to talk about the same old Pitt. But if they're able to win that, there's a good chance they get out to 4-0, and then you look at it, they've got Georgia Tech first. You know, they've got an opportunity maybe to get to 9 or 10 wins here. And if their offensive line is as good as, you know, we think it can be, I mean, I think the sky's the limit for this team. Obviously, Clemson's a tough game. North Carolina probably is going to be pretty good. Miami's going to be pretty good. But for the most part, I don't see a lot of other teams on this schedule that I would say are definitely better than Pitt or should beat Pitt.
Paul, from that standpoint, I want to go back to the – and you bring up the Tennessee game. And I've gotten the impression, before your comments a moment ago, the Tennessee game is, of the first six, the most important game for the fan base simply because it's the kind of game that Pitt has not won from a non-conference perspective in a handful of years or so.
No, absolutely. I mean, this fan base is very fragile, guys. You know, I mean, they're waiting for the next bad thing to happen all the time. And, you know, you've got a game against Tennessee. You got a game against a team that's bad. You know, Pitt fans, in their minds, they should kill Tennessee. Of course, Tennessee still has SEC players, so I don't think it should be a walkover. But Pitt should win the game. If they don't win that game, unfortunately – because you're in a city here where the Steelers are going and you've got a million other things that, you know, Penguins start up, if they lose that game, they lose the attention of a lot of the casual sport fans that they need to bring in order to have big crowds for the Clemson game, the Miami game, the, you know, those kind of games that come in where they want to have big crowds. If they lose the Tennessee game, I'm telling you, this is a very fragile fan base that says, oh, well, same old Pitt, let's not worry about it, we'll wait till next year. When they lose another bad game or two. So, I mean, and God forbid if they lose one of those other three games. God forbid if that happens. If that happens, we'll start to hear, talk about maybe it's time to make a change. So, you know, I don't think that Pat Narduzzi is on a hot seat, but if he I don't think he's quite on a hot seat, but it would behoove him not to go 7-5 or 6-6 this year.
Paul, as far as the Pat Narduzzi teams, it's this one on the surface before we get to game one, feels like the offense is going to be ahead of the defense, right? I mean, we're so used to Pat's teams being really talented on the defensive front that they were going to control the game and eventually the offense will figure this thing out. Man, with Pickett back, all the wide receivers back, you talked about the offensive line, backs are pretty good, tight ends. Just seems like the offense has a chance to be really, really dynamic, and hopefully the defense can catch up as the year goes on.
No question. I think the big thing is, again, all the new players. I mean, it's just going to take a little bit of time for these guys to sort of get in sync. And one of the things about Pat Narduzzi's defense, it's not very complicated, okay? It's basically play the fundamentals, play the gap, stop the run. So, you know, it's not a thing of where there's all these exotic blitzes that they've got to learn and there's all these things that they've got to try and figure out how to do. It's a matter of chemistry and figuring out sort of the timing of things. But I really enjoy the way they play when they get going and they start getting after it. Because the big thing about them is it's all about getting to the quarterback and getting, you know, stopping the run with, you know, four or five guys up front and not having to commit to blitzing. So, you know, they lost a lot on their defensive line. It'll probably take a little bit of time for some of these younger guys that maybe didn't get quite as much playing time to really get to the point where they need to be. But I will say, you know, they have a chance. This defense, he, you know, Pat Narduzzi, for whatever people say about him, he's recruited really well, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They've got athletes. They've got speed. They've got guys that have been in the program 3 years, 4 years, or whatever. So the defense should get good pretty quickly. It's a matter of, and again, I hate to keep going back to this, if the offensive line can block and they can run the football the way he likes to run the football, this is going to be a team that's going to be a real problem to deal with.
Hey, I want to change gears slightly here for just a second. Jimbo Covert went in the Hall of Fame last weekend. Another great Pitt player. Pack had this deal last week where we were talking about people would be surprised to realize how many former Pitt Panthers are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Covert just becomes the latest. I know a bunch of Steelers went in. Bill Cowher, Polamalu, Alan Faneca, all those guys. But, Paul, you bet you've grown up around this. This program has got as much history as about any major program in this country. It's amazing when you start looking at it.
I say it all the time. If you put together all-time teams for every college football team in the country, the best of, you know, the best players they ever had, put them all together, let's do all-time teams, I would take Pitt over anybody. And that includes Miami and Notre Dame and Florida State. And people say, well, you're really crazy. Go back and look at that time from 1975 to about 1982, actually about 1988, and look at the number of guys that they have, like Jimbo Covert, like Mark May. I mean, their offensive line, you would be leaving off like legitimate NFL All-Pros to try and create their offensive line. You've got Bill Frelick. You've got a bunch of guys like that. Your quarterback, obviously, is Dan Marino. You got Tony Dorsett in the backfield. You got Mike Ditka as your tight end. Larry Fitzgerald as your receiver. It is incredible when you put it on paper and you put the best team that Pitt could put out there on paper. I'm telling you, Miami's probably really close to them. Obviously, Notre Dame, but I would take Pitt over any team. I've actually written stories about this, and people, of course, get all bent out of shape because Pitt's been so mediocre for 40 years or whatever it's been. But to be honest, even some of the years when they, I mean, your corner, even when they were bad, I mean, you've got Darrell Revis as one of your starting corners. I mean, who might be, you know, the best corner that's played in the last 20 or 30 years. It's incredible. Oh, and let's not forget, you got a guy by the name of Aaron Donald on the defensive line. I mean, it's amazing how much pro talent and how much legitimate all-pro talent this program has kicked out. That the problem is, and here's where the caveat is, that hasn't translated into winning a whole lot in the last 30 or 40 years. Think about this. Since Dan Marino left campus, which is, what, 82, something like that?
Yeah.
Pitt has not had a single season where they haven't lost at least three games. Now, think about that. My alma mater's Temple, and we pulled it off twice in that area, in that period. So, I mean, think about that. 30 years? 29, 30 years? They have lost three games or more every year for 30 years. I mean, that's almost impossible to do.
I hate to break the news to you, Paul. That's 39 right. years. 39 years.
Oh, hey, that's why I'm in journalism. My math is bad. 40 years. Basically, yeah. If they lose Makes three games us. This year, it'll be 40 straight years.
Well, hopefully Pat and the boys can change that this year. They've got the chance. We'll see if they can close the deal. But listen, keep it in the short grass today, all right? Please, the
I
short grass.
I never do that. I never do that, ever.
Paul Zeiss, 93.7 The Fanan, and also the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Great to see you. Thank you. Look forward to maybe seeing you week one up there when Roddy Jones and I have the call at UMass, okay?
Oh, that would be great. I'll come over and say hello in the booth. Next time we do this, I'll be
Look
at a desk somewhere.
Talk to Sounds you great. Take care.
Paul right, Zeiss,
we'll unbelievable. All right. When we come back, more remembrances of Bobby Bowden's great career from two of his foes, Frank Beamer at Virginia Tech and the HBC. Steve Spurrier, all from yesterday's edition of Off Campus with Pack on SiriusXM ESPNU Radio 484, and it's next with us on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham here on ACC Network on a Tuesday morning. Paul Zeiss heading to a Lynx near you. Sounds like about an 8-hour round. That's a full day. That is a full day, yeah. Wes.
If Paul doesn't sound like it takes 3 hours and 30 minutes, does
it? No. I think we're looking for a lot of balls and shrubs, it sounds like to me. yesterday afternoon on Off Campus, which you can hear from 4 to 7 p.m. on SiriusXM Channel 84, we had a tribute to Coach Bobby Bowden, and we had a couple other ACC ties that we thought we could incorporate in this morning's show. And we start off with Frank Beamer, another Hall of Fame legend at Virginia Tech. And, of course, Coach Bowden and Coach Beamer had a great game for a national championship down there at the Sugar Bowl. And I asked Frank Beamer about his memories of the late, great Bobby Bowden.
Yeah, in our ACC meetings when I first started going, he sat at the first seat across the table from him. I was on the front first seat over on this side. And we'd be in there conducting the meeting, and Coach Bowden pulled out his USA Today and start reading it. He was listening, but he was also going to read his paper while we conducted business. But I'll tell you another funny one, too. Back when early 90s when we were trying to win a football game, we played Florida State, and we really played them a great ball game. And the lead changed hands two or three times. I think we were actually leading or going down in the fourth quarter to make it a more than a seven-point game, and threw an interception, and they took it back for a score and kicked off to us. We took it back down the field. We got about to the 9-yard line or so. We were throwing to the end zone to win the ball game, but we didn't get it. We didn't make it. And we came out. We were going to come out at midfield after the game. And Coach Bowden, he was just kind of popping on out there, and he says, "Frank, wasn't that the best ball game?" And I was thinking it might have been good for you, but I'm about over here about ready to throw up.
Well,
but, it kind of told me something. I don't think a lot of guys, I think it had been a fight right there. a game has meant so much to us that he's saying, "Hey, wasn't that a great ball game?" And you won it. I think it'd probably be a fight, but I think what it really said about Coach Bowden is that it was a heck of a game, and congratulations on playing a great game, and we're lucky to win it. And so, I couldn't name a guy that said anything bad about Coach Bowden, other than the guys he beat so bad year after year. But even when he was doing it to us, I never said anything bad about him, I promise you, because, I had a lot of respect for him and appreciated the way he got things done.
Right. Here's the thing. How could you be mad at him? He gives you a couple dadgummits and golly gees and all that stuff. And, you're sitting there going, I want to beat this guy sideways. But, he's like he's like the lovable uncle. I just want to give the guy a hug, for crying out loud. And, he could charm him with the best. And, again, he was so gregarious and such a great guy. But, man, could their teams play. But, of course, it always helps to have talent. In fact, I still remember – we said that old Southern Fried Football Tour. We took that big bus down to Tallahassee one night for a Clemson Florida State game, and I think Tommy Bowden had the Tigers in the top 10, Coach had Winky, and I was sitting there in the end zone, and Winky did this play action pass at the 1-yard line. I felt like I was the only guy in the stadium who knew he had the ball. He had his back turned to everybody, turned around, and he did for a 99-yard touchdown. I think the Noles won that game 54-7, but he went across the field, shook his son's hand, and said, "Son, you got to get some better players."
Yeah, he didn't mix words very much. He was a pleasure to be around, and really, like I said, I always admired the way he recruited, because he got great players. But, boy, they played hard. They played hard.
Frank Beamer yesterday having some fun telling some stories with the coach. And, I think I could have talked to Frank for 3 hours on the entire show and just tell Bobby Bowden stories all day.
Yeah.
Joy having Coach on. And, by the way, Frank's excited about that opener for the Hokies in North Carolina. And that will be some kind of scene, as we've discussed before. So Frank joined us, but that wasn't the only Hall of Famer. What were we going to say, Wes? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was getting ready to say Steve Spurrier was with you too, right?
Right. The head ball coach called in, and he wanted to get in on the action, and he kind of kidded around with me going, Pack, you know, I'm an ACC guy, but it reminds me of Florida, but, you know, I did win a title at Duke. I said, yeah, coach, we know you won the title at Duke. But one of the things we talked to Spurrier about yesterday, of course, you know, he and Bowden went back and forth, and they needled each other. Oh, you know, coach would come up with that FSU free shoes and all that stuff. And so I asked Steve Spurrier about all that needling that he had with Bobby Bowden and all the exchanges they had over the years.
What people don't realize, back in the 90s, I had to do 22 or 23 Gator clubs during the summer. And he did about 20 or 22, I'm not sure, Seminole clubs. And he'd tell his little corny jokes, but I guess his didn't get in the newspapers as much as mine did for some reason. And but he told corny Gator jokes all the time. And then when I'd tell one, people would thought I was trying to knock him or make fun of him or something. But it was just all for fun. And then obviously he had so many really good teams. We played him last game of the season, so there was always a lot on the line for both schools in the national picture. A good portion of that time. Now we were in the SEC and they were still independent. But anyway, it was we had the conference to worry about as well as them also.
Is there anything you can share with us and the listeners in your conversation, your last conversation with Coach?
Well, I tell you what I did. I told him, I said, Coach Bowden, you don't know, you had a little bit of an effect on my coaching career. Way back in 1977, Bobby Bowden, I think it was his third year at Florida State, I just finished up pro football, got cut by three different teams. I'm in Gainesville sitting up in the stands watching the Gators play. And FSU came in there with Jimmy Jordan and I think Wally Woodham, a quarterback. They threw the ball and ran the ball up and down the field on the Gators, beat them 37-9. And I'm sitting up there watching that. And I had to do something. I had to get a job. We didn't make much money in pro football back in the 70s there. And I said, maybe if I can get a chance to be a coach and throw the ball up and down the field the way these guys are doing it, you know, maybe I'd have a chance to be successful. And that was watching FSU. They threw the ball around before I did, long before I did, in the SEC. So, you know, I certainly didn't invent passing the ball because FSU did it extremely well, even way back in 77 and on up through those years.
What did Bobby say about you basically stealing his idea?
Oh, not too much. He's such a class guy, wonderful guy, sincere Christian man. And I've never heard him say a bad thing about anybody, to tell you the truth.
Steve Spurrier yesterday on Off Campus. And one thing I just will point out here, and I thought it was interesting. I know we didn't run this particular cut. But Steve Spurrier mentioned that he got word from Bobby Bowden that he'd want to talk to him recently. And Coach Bowden had reached out to him. And so they got the phone number, and that started the conversation that Steve had with Bobby Bowden. And he said he was really taken back by it. He really appreciated Coach reaching out, knowing what his legacy was coming up. And they had their last conversation. So those were some of the conversations he had with Bobby Bowden their last go-around.
You know, it's interesting. Two great coaches, Frank Beamer, who, you know, we've had on a couple times, and I hope at some point we take this show, we can sit down and have a long conversation with Frank Beamer, you know, because I think there's a lot to talk about with a guy who went through as much as Frank Beamer did in his career. Second is Steve Spurrier. It reminds me of two things. One, it reminds me of the post-game handshake in football games. Basketball, we have it. But football, it's much more pronounced, right? Everybody rushes the field, and the two coaches meet, and they shake hands. There is a bit of a Bowden story in here, and Paul Johnson tells it better than I do. But in 2008, Georgia Tech beat Florida State in Atlanta at Grant Field, an amazing game. A fumble, Marcus Thomas, I think, fumbled the ball going into the end zone. It was recovered. It was jarred loose by a safety named Cooper Taylor and recovered by Rashad Reed. okay, in the end zone. Florida State looked like they were going to win the game, and Georgia Tech held on to win. The next year, this wild, you know, score-a-thon went on in Tallahassee, delayed 90 minutes for rain, and Georgia Tech ended up winning the game at the end. And Paul Johnson said the first year they came out after they won that game at Grant Field, he walks across the field, coach, and he had loved Coach Bowden just like anybody else had growing up and developing his offense. And Bowden comes up and goes, "Well, buddy, the old wishbone got me again," you know, or whatever. And then the next year, they win in Tallahassee. I hope for Paul's sake I'm telling this the right way. Bowden comes out there and goes, "Paul, that wishbone did it." You know, I mean, and so there you go. That's all he said. And he lost, and yet he was willing to kind of kibitz a little bit like he was with Frank Beamer, right? So that takes you to that. Second part that just caught my ear. Isn't it interesting? You tell that story about Spurrier and Bowden talking on the phone, and Bobby Bowden knows kind of where he is in life, right? And Spurrier is finding out. And I'm going to go back to this yesterday because we talked about it, and I got a couple phone calls yesterday from people connected to Carolina basketball who said it was amazing to hear former players talk about Bobby Bowden the way those players talk about Dean Smith, right? Remember the friendship between Dean Smith and Mike Krzyzewski that none of us really knew about until it was later in life?
Right.
It's funny, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting how the rivals, they become a team, if you will. They become conversational. They live their glory. They go back to those battles.
Well, I think, too, that when you're one of the greats, right, and Frank Beamer, great, Spurrier, great, Bowden, great, and mm-hmm. you had that many battles, at the end – yeah, you want to beat them when you see them every time. Every time you want to beat them. But I think the greats have a mutual appreciation for what – they understand what you've had to go through because they've been through it. I mean, Kay and Dean, same deal, right? And I think at the end, Steve Spurrier and Bobby Bowden, hey, you know what? Were they different? Yeah. Did they have great success? Without question. Hall of Famers, checked every box you want. At the end, you know what? Bowden made Spurrier better. Spurrier made Bowden better. Yep. Same thing with Kay and Dean. I think when you have that mutual respect that, yeah, hey, it's a big business. It's a lot of pressure. We're getting paid a lot of money, but we're not doing this for the cash. It's about having that, you know, that extra, hey, guess what? You know that I know that I beat you when it mattered. But at the end of the day, there's such a respect factor. And it certainly came across with Steve Spurrier yesterday talking about Bobby Bowden and being honored kind of to find out that, hey, coach wants to talk to me. And he found out and had a great conversation with him before he passed. So I will say this too real quick. We as fans, because that's what we are. We're fans. We are so blessed. And I've said this 1,000 times on this show. And when it comes to basketball in this league, we have been beyond spoiled.
Whew.
Beyond spoiled. When it comes to, you know, spikes in football, Bobby Bowden, what Dabo's doing at Clemson, and there are others. Just enjoy the run, right? Enjoy the journey because you just – nothing's guaranteed here. And I think as fans, sometimes you just expect, oh, we're going to win 10 games every year. Hey, man, it's not supposed to happen that way. Only few people get a chance to go with what Nick Saban's doing at Alabama, what Dabo's doing at Clemson. What, you know, the Urban Meyer and Ryan Day combination on Ohio State. Man, you know, you got to enjoy it. You got to enjoy it. And I think it's kind of cool to take a step back. And when we do remembrances, again, you don't want to lose anybody, but it happens, obviously. But to hear Spurrier and Frank Beamer yesterday talking about the greatness of Bobby Bowden, I mean, it just kind of puts you back centered again as a fan of really what an incredible joy it is to watch these guys at work.
Yep. Yep. Again, the public ceremony is Saturday morning, 9:30 at the Tucker Center on the Florida State campus. And that will be, incredibly emotional, but also very celebratory as well for so many Florida State fans and players. Don't forget, tomorrow night, the road tour on ACC Football Network continues. The football trip is at Chestnut Hill. We put it in the hands of Jordan Cornett and one of the great Eagles, Mark Herzlich. They'll visit with Jeff Hafley on Phil Jurkovec and how can he live up to the lofty expectations and more. 7 o'clock Wednesday night, the ACC football road trip is at Chestnut Hill right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. As Mark said yesterday, we talked to Charlie Ward and Derek Brooks about their recruiting stories with Bobby Bowden. Danny Cannell was also involved in this conversation. It's pretty funny stuff. Derrick Brooks knew he had no choice because mom said I was going to Florida State. You'll hear all of it next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. Tuesday's show continues. And Wes, you mentioned Derrick Brooks, Charlie Ward yesterday, talking about the recruiting process was a great deal of fun.
Yeah, unbelievable, right? I mean, just guys who take you through kind of the process. You know they're great players, but it still germinates from that recruiting process. And Charlie Ward and Derrick Brooks and Danny Cannell all talk about what it's like to be recruited by Bobby Bowden.
Well, believe it or not, I had to be sold that I was a very good football player to him by Coach Wayne McDuffie. So I'm grateful for Coach McDuffie being in my corner and, you know, allowing Coach to at least see, give me an opportunity. And just like I've done all my career is whenever I'm presented an opportunity, I want to do the best I can with it. And so having Coach Bowden, who's a living legend in our household, because I was from Thomasville and we watched him every Sunday morning on the Bobby Bowden Show. We watched his teams play. And so when we got an opportunity for him to come to Thomasville and I was being recruited by them, you know, it was like most people who see celebrities, and, you know, like, man, he's actually here. And so that was a surreal, special moment for not just myself, but also my high school teammates to see him. And just the opportunity that he gave me to be able to go to Florida State to play basketball and football, as well as get my degree.
Do you remember the recruiting process the first time you met Coach?
Oh, yes. Coach is a legendary closer now. He's the Mario Rivera. he's not letting many opportunities to come in and go get by him. He's definitely a closer. And, you know, just do it. I tell you what, he knew how to close the moms. He knew how to recruit the mothers. And my mom was no different in that regard. That the moment I'm always forget that, again, he always brought this up, was my sister fell asleep sitting in his lap because she was a toddler when he was recruiting me. And, you know, he just wanted to hold it. She ended up falling asleep. So my mom gets up to get her to go put her in the bed. He's like, oh, no. You know, she's right at home laying here. This is family. He's right at home. And my mom was hook, line, sinker. She was done. She did not take any more meetings in recruiting from that night on. It was basically being my high school coach. My mom, she didn't want to talk to any other head coach. She was done. She was all in.
Man, there's so many great stories. And you're right. He didn't know my name till my junior year. But that was when you knew you made it, right? And that was the starting quarterback. And then it was like, hey, Dana, come here. Like, but my freshman year, I was buddy. Everybody was buddy. But it was such a cordial Southern greeting that it just instantly made you feel special. But, you know, I remember my freshman year, and this is kind of a glimpse of Coach Bowden, because it kind of goes back to the name thing. But I remember he used to do the Sunday morning show with Gene Deckeroff, and it was the seminal show, and they'd go over highlights of the game, and they'd sit there, and they'd have guests, and occasionally Burt Reynolds would make an appearance. But when they did the highlights was when the players wanted to watch, because, you know, we didn't get to go instantly to social media and see our highlights, so we wanted to see the highlights of the game. Freshman year, get into some garbage time, and I throw my first touchdown pass. And Coach Bowden's there, and he didn't know anybody's name. So be like, that number 13, what a great throw that was from that young freshman, looking good. And Gene Deckeroff chimes in. Well, that's Danny Cannell, you know, from Fort Lauderdale. And Coach Bowden goes, boy, I remember his mama, man, she made some the best Italian cooking I've ever had. And I was beaming with pride. And so my roommate is in there watching with me. He hadn't played yet. And so I'm sitting there feeling on cloud nine. I call my mom up. I'm like, did you watch that? I'm like, he was raving about your cooking. And, you know, my mom was all excited. So the next week, my roommate gets to go in the game, and he gets a big sack in garbage time. And so he's on there, and we're watching the show again, and Coach Bowden says, well, there's number 48 making a great play on the defense. What an impressive freshman. And Gene Dekaroff says, well, that's Todd Rebol from Port Charlotte. You know, and Coach Bowden goes, well, man, I was at his house, and his mama had some of the best Italian cooking I've ever had. And I was like, oh, man. And my roommate and I looked at each other, and we just started laughing. I didn't call my mom because I didn't want to ruin it for her. But it was just – he's so great. I mean, it was awesome. And he had a way about him where – you know, and we all kind of knew it because you have 110 players and you come through so many times. But he just had a way about him that just he knew how to get to your moms. And boy, he was going to do it on his Florida State football show every Sunday morning.
And that's what made him a great, right. not good, but a yep. great recruiter. A great, one of the all-time yep. great recruiters.
Yeah, he wasn't shy about hiding it either. He said, I don't even recruit the players. I go after their mamas. He knew the way to players' hearts. And he sold them. He was like, I'm going to take care of your boy like he's my own. And he did. Because I remember being recruited by him. The first experience I had with him, I remember walking away thinking this is too good to be true. Like at my parents, because you get sales pitches and you have to see who's real and who's not. We were a little skeptical. Like this is like he was preaching and my mom was like, yes. But when he left, you're like, is it the real deal? And sure enough, the more players you talk to in his program, they're like, yep, that's how he is every day, day in and day out. And sure enough, that's what I experienced. And not only did he live up to the expectations of what I thought I was going to get, he exceeded them even more than I could have imagined.
Great stories.
How about that?
Yeah, all good stuff.
How about that? Yeah. Again, if you ever saw a Bobby Bowden television show and you maybe grew up in Alabama where you saw a Bear Bryant show, the similarities between the two. Bobby Bowden was clearly influenced. His television influence, personality-wise, was totally influenced from Bear Bryant's show. And I don't know. We'll see if we can. It's worth your time if you can find a clip of the Bobby Bowden show where he does the highlights. It's just worth your time. It's, there's Sam Cowart from Marathon, Florida. Saw Sam's mom after the game. I mean, it's off the chart. So anyway, man, what a loss. I mean, just the personality, the legacy, the presence, all those things from college football.
Yep.
We go to the 9 o'clock hour, the power hour as it is. And if you weren't with us early, what could have been for Florida State? If it were the college football playoff format when the Noles were going 14 straight years in the top four of the AP, there'd have been more than two, I can tell you that. Back after this.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.